We're here for a reason. There's a new standard, and I keep talking about it. No, I wasn't here for the things that have happened in the past, some of which I was too young to even remember. And there's a new standard, and we're going to, you know, try and keep it that way.
Miles, a dominant performance like this, what does it say about who you guys are? Who are the Cleveland Browns right now?
We're the Cleveland Browns. Same old Cleveland Browns.
I don't regret what I said. I said the Browns is the Browns. You know, they came out and, you know, they played a hell of a game.
Six playoff games are in the books, plus the national championship game is tonight. ESPN and ABC, Alabama and Ohio State. So much to get into this morning. Good morning, Stephen A. Good morning, Max. I'm Molly Karam-Rose.
Good morning.
Let's dive right into it. Stephen A., and we're going to start with that late night game. I know you're cranky, and that's right where I want to go. Because you know what, Stephen A., it really was a tale of two seasons for the Cleveland Browns. Dealing with all that COVID adversity, they show up, they show out, and they send your Steelers packing. So I ask you this morning, were you more impressed by Cleveland or are you more depressed by Pittsburgh?
Well, we know the answer to this question. I'm clearly depressed, you know. I got a new show debuting tonight, and I can't even focus on that right now because I'm just completely depressed at what I saw. I expected to be in a very celebratory mood this morning. Looking forward to discussing football all day long, thinking about my Pittsburgh Steelers nation, the black and gold, the terrible towels, and all of those different things. And I watched the defense go out, greatly assisted by the offense nonetheless, but surrender at the end of the day, 49 points. The first offensive snap of the game for the Pittsburgh Steelers was over the head of Ben Roethlisberger, 6'5", 6'6". Pouncey, a veteran, snaps the ball over his head, and it's a touchdown for the Cleveland Browns. And it just nosedived from there. Big Ben Roethlisberger throwing interceptions all over the place. We see the snap over his head right at that particular moment. They can't even fall on the ball properly. The Cleveland Browns end up falling into the end zone, getting the touchdown. And the Steelers were obviously in a hole. But then, what excuse in God's green earth could you possibly have for being down 28-0 in the first quarter? They were getting their butts kicked. It's just that simple. And so as a result of it, it's basically chickens coming home to roost. I told Ryan Clark and others weeks ago, I said I didn't like the way the Steelers were looking. I didn't like the ability without T.J. Watt to get to the quarterback. Obviously, injuries to Devin Bush earlier and then Bud Dupree a little bit later on in the season compromised their ability to get to the quarterback, compromised them in the secondary. We saw all of that. I've continuously lamented the fact that this is the Steelers. As Max Kellerman has pointed out on many occasions, with the introductory press conference of Mike Tomlin, his head coach for the Pittsburgh Steelers over 14 years ago, run the ball, stop the run. That was the mantra. Well, somebody forgot to tell the Steelers about that over the last 3 years. They've been one of the worst rushing teams in the National Football League. This year, they were the absolute worst, averaging about 84 yards a game. They didn't even get to 60 last night. Their running game was putrid. And we understand, for the most part, as to why that was. Because when you get in such a hole, you got to spend all your time throwing the football, which Big Ben Roethlisberger did. And in the end, what it comes down to is this. Big Ben Roethlisberger, he's not a scrub. He's still a future Hall of Famer. We get all of that. He did throw for over 500 yards last night. We understand that. But those four interceptions speak volumes. There's a reason you mentioned Tom Brady and Drew Brees and Aaron Rodgers and guys like that as being on a different level than Big Ben Roethlisberger. Because with every great moment comes a huge mistake. That's what it is. And his lack of mobility, his age and attrition, and the punishment that he has absorbed, the Steelers got to be looking in a different direction moving forward in the future. I'm just really, really disgusted right now. The Steelers, as far as I'm concerned, have made me depressed. And I'm quite sure I speak on behalf of all Steelers fans when I say that's how we feel.
Well, this playoff wild card weekend was so exciting, Stephen A., that I've started to lose my voice. So I'm going to have to keep it as even keeled as I can right now. But let me just say, I was very impressed with the Cleveland Browns. This game was won up front. And this is why I thought Cleveland was going to win. You had a dominant offensive line on one side of the ball with an ascending quarterback who, when he finally had a head coach, a good head coach and some stability, showed you what he could do, which is to be a franchise quarterback. Didn't look that way for a while, but that's what Baker Mayfield is. On the other side of the ball, an offensive line that couldn't block for the run and didn't give Ben Roethlisberger enough time to let those receivers get down the field even. They had to get rid of the ball lightning fast. And a descending quarterback in Roethlisberger. I thought the Browns would win for that reason, but they exceeded my expectations the way they came out. And when everyone was harping on Kevin Stefanski not being there and what that means in terms of play calling, and Stephen A., I likened it to a great trainer and corner man, right? The work he does in the corner night of the fight, that's some of it. But most of it is the preparation in camp, the discipline, the going over the strategy, the perfecting everything. And that's what I see in this Cleveland Browns team. Stefanski, the play caller, it's nice to have him there. But the culture that he's established, the fact that the Browns come together and came together throughout the season in adversity, the maturity you've heard from Baker Mayfield, when people ran to him and said that you, Stephen A., had these criticisms for him. Remember that? We were listening to what he was going to say, and he said, those guys are doing their jobs. We have a job to do here. We focus on what's inside this building. Every single thing pointed to a maturing franchise. You don't know until they go out there and do it, though. And because of COVID protocols, they were missing guys on their offensive line, which is the strength I just mentioned. And what happened? Did they suffer? Nope. They came together. And the play of an offensive line, to me, is indicative of the culture of the team. Because offensive linemen who play together and have chemistry can be better than guys with just big names or guys with big reputations on an offensive line who don't play together. This Cleveland Browns team played together. Baker Mayfield made good decisions throughout the game. And Stephen A., the big picture is they beat the Pittsburgh Steelers in the playoffs. They beat the Pittsburgh Steelers in the playoffs. You realize the last time the Cleveland Browns won a playoff game, you know, they won a playoff game, and then after that, a guy named Baker Mayfield was born. And he was born and grew up and got to quarterback the Cleveland Browns, and they finally win a playoff game, and it's against Big Brother in the division. Coming back, remember the curb stomping they took earlier in the season? From there to this is a very impressive thing to see. My hat is off to the Cleveland Browns.
Well, listen, it did help that you got Nick Chubb and Kareem Hunt. We know those brothers are big time. As far as I'm concerned, when you look at the tandem, I challenge anybody to find me a better running game than what Cleveland Brown brings to the table, because those two brothers running the football out of the backfield, they're going to definitely do some damage. That's number one. Number two, the Steelers certainly didn't help because they were turnover prone. They committed 5 turnovers for the game. Cleveland didn't commit a single one. Number three, you got Juju Smith-Schuster. Let's not forget him. We'll attribute it to youth and youthful ignorance. We like him as a person, as a player as well. He's got tremendous promise. But you don't go out and do what he did. And one of these things that I want to mention as an aside, as it pertains to this particular story, Max, is that it's something that I religiously say. If you are a basketball player, team sport, there's some individuality in that so I can understand it. Boxers, UFC fighters, tennis players, golfers, etc. I don't have a problem with it. I despise when you got guys that talk smack, that you really, I mean, when you consider that it's a team game. And I only say that from this perspective. Juju Smith-Schuster doesn't play defense. He barely plays special teams. You can't speak for everybody. Why would you go out there and talk about that, you know, just regular old Cleveland Browns? Why do you think Myles Garrett said what he said? Of course, that's bulletin board material. And when you have the power to back it up as an individual yourself, that's one thing. When you are literally at the mercy of 52 other guys to come to your rescue, it's just not smart. It's not intelligent to do what he did. And in the end, what it comes down to is that the Steelers made a lot of noise. They started off the season 11-0, but I talked about their defense. I talked about their running game or absence thereof or lack thereof. And sure enough, this is what ended up happening. So after an 11-0 start, they lost 5 games over the next 6 weeks and are bounced out of the playoffs on the first weekend.
Let me say this. Mike Tomlin should have never punted it. He should have gone for it on 4th down. His play calling was imperfect, far from perfect yesterday. However, they still have Mike Tomlin, who's a great coach. He's never been below 500 in his entire tenure. No excuses, right? Here's the crazy thing about Pittsburgh right now. The Browns are here. The Ravens are here. When Joe Burrow gets back, what does that mean about the Bengals? The AFC North is going to be a beast, and we saw what it was without Tom Brady in the AFC East, with the Bills coming up and the Dolphins coming up. What's it going to be for Pittsburgh going forward, even though they'll have Mike Tomlin? Without Ben Roethlisberger, at least as we knew him, with these other three teams in the division, two of them are there and one of them might be coming.
Yeah. Stephen A., you know, at least you have some good memories, like those first 11 weeks. I'm sorry, sir. The party's over. Baker Mayfield had the best QBR of any quarterback this past weekend against the third-best defense in the NFL, but now the Browns will have to face the Chiefs. Let's get to another team, fellas, that had to get a monkey off their back, and they sure did. That would be the Baltimore Ravens. The Ravens getting revenge, and Lamar Jackson gets his first playoff win, sending Tennessee packing.
We gave a game ball to Lamar and really the whole team, backing him up and having his back for his first playoff win. We're just happy for him. It's something that he won't have to talk about in the future.
I wasn't really worried about it. You know, it's just my third year in the league. And I don't really care what people say. You know, I'm just happy we got the win, you know, to move on in the next round.
Max, there's been a lot of question marks surrounding Lamar Jackson. Can he really throw? Is he really an NFL quarterback? Can he handle the pressure? That was something you talked about in the biggest moments. Did he finally silence his critics?
No, but he did, as you mentioned, get the monkey off his back. You know, my criticism of Lamar, my biggest criticism was that, I mean, he silenced me in this respect. My biggest criticism was not that he couldn't beat good teams or pass the ball. You know, for his age, at age 21, age 22, he passed the ball very well by NFL historical standards, right? Who else at his age passed the ball better? No, and by the way, he'd beaten plenty of good teams. My criticism was he never beat the teams he had to beat when the lights shine brightest. The Ben Roethlisberger Steelers, he lost to 0-1. The Chiefs, you're in the AFC, you got to beat the Chiefs, 0-3. And in the playoffs, he was 0-2, and particularly in the first game, played poorly. And even last year, put up numbers, but was not his normal excellent self. He was a little bit less than that. But when he had to be great, he was great. So in that sense, he showed he can win a playoff game. But Stephen A., the critics will remain, because the criticism is this: a player with Lamar Jackson's style, meaning he's not a pocket passer. He's not going to beat you, you know, with precision passing. He's going to do it with his legs in the moment of truth. That style player can't win a Super Bowl. Stephen A., I don't think that's true. I think he can, but that's going to be the criticism. And until Lamar Jackson makes a deep playoff run, that criticism will remain. As a matter of fact, it was huge that he won that game. But in the history of the NFL, has a guy with that style, no one's like Lamar, right? But a guy with that style ever won a Super Bowl? And until he makes that deep playoff run, that criticism will continue.
You're wrong. And the reason why you're wrong is because all of those questions, they can remain in the perpetuity. It doesn't matter. The bottom line is he was the storyline because he was 0-2 in the postseason and he had played awful. That's the bottom line. Everything that you just said about him, we've always known. You have talked about it ad nauseum. So even you recognize what he brought to the table. But in the end, if he were not 0-2, he would not have been the storyline that he is. The fact of the matter, he's no longer 0-1 anything in the postseason. He's got his first postseason victory. And even though he didn't necessarily do it with his arms because he only threw for 179 yards, it wasn't a lights-out performance with his arms. It certainly was with his legs. That touchdown run was absolutely sensational, as John Harbaugh pointed out. And we got to give him credit for that. Obviously, he had two other key runs, particularly the last one to go out to, you know, to basically seal the deal when he rushed for about 33 yards and just sat down on the field and didn't run out of bounds so the clock could continue to run. The guy ended up running for 136 yards for the game. He did this similarly last year in the postseason against Tennessee. There's no surprise because they've got the Baltimore Ravens have the number one running attack in football because of Lamar Jackson. We get all of that. But in the end, Tennessee's a pretty damn good team. And for him to produced the way that he produced, particularly when the defense played the way that they played in shutting down Derrick Henry and neutralizing or actually re-exposing Ryan Tannehill. You can't say enough about the Ravens, and you can't say enough about Lamar Jackson. To know all of that stuff was on his shoulders coming into the game, and for him to answer the call the way that he did, he deserves major props, major credit for it. I'm not saying you're saying otherwise. I am saying this. In the end, when it comes down to the question about silencing his critics, it's about the criticism. The criticism was he did not win come postseason time. That is no longer the case. Now he'll be judged and picked apart like any other quarterback would be. But what won't be the narrative is that the man can't win a playoff game because he did that.
Well, there are at least two criticisms, Stephen A., as you know. One is, can he win a big game? A playoff game, yes, but to me it was just the games he had to win. He did that. That is true. Not right. He did that. That is true. That does get that monkey off his back. It silences that criticism from guys like me. Can he do it? Not saying he couldn't, but can he? But Stephen A., you are the one with the criticism about the thrower of the football. You have, as you would say, religiously brought this point up, that for a quarterback, in order for you to really believe in that dude, the Super Bowl-capable guy, he has to be a thrower of the football. Now, Lamar Jackson did some very nice things in that game, even as a thrower of the football. The best was when he used his legs to escape pressure, scrambles, and then completes the pass to Mark Andrews, right? That was a pretty pass. That was a pretty play. But until he does that consistently, to the point that Stephen A. Smith isn't bringing this very point up about Lamar Jackson. Can he win a Super Bowl? Can he do this? And Stephen A. is going to be sitting there going, I don't believe in him as a thrower of the football. You see, that is the criticism that he has not silenced.
Well, see, here's where you're wrong. The critics, it pertains to the specific criticism aimed in his direction coming into this weekend's game. I still got questions about him throwing the football. I still don't believe he's going to be able to throw the football as effectively as you need him to beat a Patrick Mahomes. I understand that.
I rest my point case.
No, you can't rest your case. You can rest your voice because it's not helping you, but you can't rest your case because in the end, what it comes down to is
thanks,
this.
Brother.
If you recall, the criticism was the man can't win a playoff game. We didn't parse words. We didn't sit up there and pick apart, well, can he throw the football? Can he do this? Can he do that? Not when it came to the playoff performance. What we said is by any means necessary, no matter what it is, you being the exceptional athlete that you are, being able to run the football is exceptionally well, more so that better than any quarterback that has ever played, you know, running a football. Can you do that come playoff time? Yesterday, that's exactly what he did. That was the criticism from the critics. You can sit up there and pick apart his game, which we will continue to do throughout his career. But what we cannot say any longer is the man can't win a playoff game. He did it. He did it yesterday. And in that regard, all of us should shut the hell up. Lamar Jackson showed up and handled his business. We can't say he can't win a playoff game anymore.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code FIRSTTAKE and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to gamble responsibly. See BetMGM.com for terms. This U.S. promotional offer not available in D.C., Mississippi, North Carolina, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 for New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. For Massachusetts, 1-800-327-5050. For Iowa, 1-800-BETS-OFF. For Puerto Rico, 1-800-981-0023. For West Virginia, visit 1-800-GAMBLER.net. First bet offer for new customers only. Subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel.
Hey, I'm Molly Karam, and thanks so much for listening to the First Take podcast. Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. TB12 gets it done, fellas, but I think it was a little too close for comfort there, Stephen A. Against a quarterback many people haven't heard of in Washington, the backup, Taylor Heineke. Stephen A., I'll start with you. Are you a little bit worried about the Bucs, even though they did get the win?
Hell yeah. Taylor Heineke, listen, he might be the future signal caller for the Washington football team. I was impressed with what I saw from him. He deserves props, no question about it. Threw for over 300 yards. I get all of that. But damn, it was a second start. And it was a postseason game. And the Buccaneers giving up the yardage to him, I had a problem with it. It wasn't like the Washington football team had a stout running game with Antonio Gibson in them Saturday. That wasn't the case. But somehow, some way, this kid had guts. He had moxie. He threw some really good dimes. No question about it. I love that touchdown pass that he threw. The bottom line is this. When you look at what he brings to the table, if you're the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, with Todd Bowles as your defensive coordinator, with these brothers on that squad, there's no reason, if you're talking about ultimately going against Drew Brees and then potentially Aaron Rodgers, if Taylor Heineke is giving you problems, what the hell are we supposed to look forward to? Again, I'm not jumping off the bandwagon or anything like that, even though I do believe both Green Bay and New Orleans are better. Tampa Bay can beat them both. But you certainly ain't going to be able to beat them if your defense is looking the way that it looked. This game was entirely too damn close for too long before Tom Brady and them were ultimately able to pull away. And I would say this, getting Devin White back, who's been gone the previous two games because he was on that COVID-19 list, is going to help because he ain't that great in coverage, but he is a great spy for, you know, when you're looking at the quarterback, and obviously he can help get to the quarterback as well. So in that regard, and help stuff the running game. So in that regard, I'm happy that he's getting back and I expect things to be better. I loved what I saw from Tom Brady. I loved what I saw from Mike Evans. Chris Godwin, damn it, stop dropping so many passes, okay? Get that together. Leonard Fournette filled in admirably because Ronald Jones II wasn't there. And Leonard Fournette rushed for 93 yards, but he was very productive. So I see things on offense. Got no issues there. My issue is with Tampa's defense. I didn't like how they were allowing Taylor Heineke to fling the football because my imagination ran wild thinking about Drew Brees. We've already seen what New Orleans has done to Tampa this year, particularly the last time they were in Tampa. And obviously, if you were lucky enough to get past that, you'll likely have that bad man known as Aaron Rodgers waiting for you. Taylor Heineke should not have been giving you the trouble he gave you this Saturday if you are the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, Bruce Arians. I'm not happy about that.
I'm not worried about the Bucs. I mean, I didn't think they were going to win the Super Bowl this year, but I thought they'd win a playoff game, and they've done that. First of all, their defense did not play great, Stephen A. You're right. They didn't get a lot of pressure up front, which is surprising, you would think. Considering total defense, they were the sixth best in the league this year in the regular season. That happens. Not every defense looks great every week. But the Bucs, the question is, do they have a good defense or not? Yes, they do. They have a very good defense. They have not just a top half defense, they have a top quarter, like top 25 percentile defense in the NFL. If that's not elite, it's the next thing to it. So I'm not worried about that, really. Meantime, Tom Brady's looked excellent. And part of the, like, I admit it, it's not just, I was prepared to say, Tom Brady would put up numbers this year. Of course, who wouldn't? Any average quarterback would in this offense with these weapons. And by the way, they even protect very well for him normally. I mean, Washington has a really talented defense, especially up front. And you know, so, okay, they're going to create some problems. But actually, the offensive line for Tampa has been pretty good and getting better all year. They may be peaking now, or at least heading into the playoffs. So I'm not too worried about that. Brady has not just looked okay, or what you'd expect from an average quarterback given all the weapons. He's given you a clear premium over that. I admit it. So I'm not worried about the quarterback, really. Well, when you put pressure on him, he doesn't like it. Yeah, no kidding. It's, you know, of course, what quarterback likes it when, you know, they get pressure? Of course he doesn't. And he's never been great with that compared to when the pocket is clean. And that's the key to beating Brady. Yeah, Sherlock, you think? But again, I didn't think they're going to win the Super Bowl, but I'm encouraged by what I've seen. And Stephen A., the reason is, more than anything, which shocks me to say, they have Antonio Brown. You know, when you think about the Bucs, it's so easy that he actually goes under the radar now because Mike Evans is their best receiver and Godwin, right? No, actually, if AB, who now has games under his belt and is more in the flow of the offense, as AB gets more to his normal self, he's clearly the best receiver on the team if he's just regular AB. Mike Evans was never as good as AB, and neither is Godwin. Now, at their best, they've never been as good as AB at his best, and AB is trending in that direction. So now you got to think of this Bucs team. Damn. If you think of AB in fact, not just the name, with those receivers. And finally, Stephen A., yes, the Saints have beaten them twice. That is true. Although the Saints get off to slow starts usually in the first half, and that hasn't been the Bucs' problem, really, recently. That is true. But if the Bucs beat the Saints, different going to the frozen tundra than it is playing in Tampa. But Stephen A., they positively beat the brakes off the Packers the first time they played. And it was at a time when the Packers were playing very well. Tom Brady and the Bucs beat them. So I wouldn't say I watched that game yesterday and say, boy, I'm scared for Tampa. If anything, I'm encouraged.
I'm amazed at how long you continue to talk. You're supposed to have a bad voice, but you keep going and going and going. I mean, I just don't understand you right here. I mean, you got to have laryngitis, brother? I mean, chill out. The fact of the matter is, Max Kellerman, none of that is relevant. And here's the reason why. Over the last five games, Brady has averaged about 342 yards passing. They've averaged over 35 points a game in their last five games. But in four of their last seven games, they've surrendered 300-yard passing games. And one of them was to some dude named Taylor Heinicke, who was in his second career start. And so when I look at Tampa Bay, what I'm saying is, okay, I get all your points about their offense. We expected their offense to be lethal. You've got Bruce Arians. You got Byron Leftwich. On top of it all, you got Brady with Godwin, with Evans, with Antonio Brown, with Gronk, all of these boys, Ronald Jones, Leonard Fournette. They got weapons out the wazoo. We got all of that. But the bottom line is, when we look at the Saints, we don't think they're better than the Saints. When we look at the Packers, we don't think they're better than the Packers. Why? Because we don't expect the defense to stop those other dudes. And that's the real problem here. Somehow, some way, they're going to have to do something to neutralize opposing teams' passing attack. If you don't do that, it's going to be a problem. They're about to go up against Drew Brees. Last time they saw Drew Brees threw for 471 yards? I think that's what it is. I got to look that up. I think it was like 471 yards and like six touchdowns, for crying out loud. They blitzed Tampa. Guess what? The offense itself ain't going to be able to do it for you. The bottom line is their defense is going to have to show up and stop somebody. And my problem is, their problem is against the pass. Against the pass with Drew Brees and likely Aaron Rodgers potentially being your next two quarterbacks. If you get past Drew Brees, it's a very daunting situation as far as I'm concerned. I'm looking at the Bucs secondary right now, and I got problems with it.
Oh, Michael Thomas being back, Drew Brees having his full complement of weapons, the fact that the Saints have already beaten them twice, it is daunting. The Bucs have now gotten to where I thought they would get this year. Double-digit wins. They won 11, I figured 10, but okay, double-digit wins and a playoff win. I didn't think they were going to do better than that. So if anything, if you're asking me, am I more or less confident about them now? I'm more confident about them, Stephen A., because of what I mentioned. You're right about the defense recently, but generally, it's been a very good defense throughout most games of the season. That's one. Two, the complement of receivers is absurd right now, considering the way AB's been playing lately. It's absurd. Like, how many times in the history of football have you had three guys at the receiver position all playing on that level, and then Tom Brady's the quarterback, and the offensive line, for the most part, has done a good job protecting him? Usually, if a team beats another team twice, they'll beat them again, because what it demonstrates is they're better than that other team. Nevertheless,
look at you. How losing do you your feel, voice Stephen and N? Still talking.
More or
look at you. You more, almost choked up right there. Yo, I'm trying to help you out. Take a deep breath, slow down.
Let me
take
ask
a deep
something.
Breath. Woo-sah. Now go ahead with your point, bro.
Thank you very much. How do you feel if you were a Saints fan? More or less confident that you've beaten them twice? Wouldn't you be nervous? Damn. Are we going to beat Tom Brady and this Bucs team three times in the same season?
They ain't worried about it. They ain't worried about it. They could lose, but they ain't worried about it. If I'm the Saints, I'm like, please, I already spanked them. I'll do it again.
Hey, hey, I'm Molly Karam, and thanks so much for listening to the First Take podcast. You can now stream the most MLB games on DirecTV without a satellite dish. Yes, catch the clutch hits, strikeouts, grand salamis, web gems with nothing on your roof. So whoever's up there, whether it's roofers, Santa, birds, old-time chimney sweepers, moody teenagers, thrill-seeking raccoons, you name it, they won't find a satellite dish, but you will find your MLB games on DirecTV. That means DirecTV is your home for baseball this season. Root with nothing on your roof. Yes, stream your team. Call 1-800-DIRECTV or visit directtv.com to sign up today. Claim based on the total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Thanks so much for listening to the First Take Pod. Have a fabulous day. Hey, Molly Karam here, and thanks so much for listening to the First Take podcast. Vivid Seats wants to get you to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part, each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seats rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As the official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code TAKE. That's code TAKE. Visit vividseats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats. Experience it live. I'm not going to lie. Once I knew my Giants had no shot, I was kind of rooting for Seattle to be in the Super Bowl, but that is clearly not the case. Look who's here, my guy from the University of Connecticut. There he is.
What's
Dan
up?
Orlovsky. Hi, Dan.
What's up, puppies?
What's up? What's up? Oh, my gosh. Stephen A., you're up first. Look at his face. Stephen A., be excited. You've got a new show today. It's all starting. I'm going to ask you about it later. Be in a better mood, would you?
Last night.
I'm just saying, you should bring up Connecticut when there's a basketball topic. But when it's football, I don't understand why you always mention UConn. It's just me. It's just me. But go ahead.
He's just my brethren. Okay. We'll keep it going. Stephen A., was it a mistake? I can't believe I'm asking this, but was it a mistake for the Hawks to prioritize Russell Wilson when we talk about how poor their defense was?
Believe it or not, I'm going to say yes. And that's not an indictment, Dan and Max, against Russell Wilson. We know that he's a stud and he's a star, even though he did not look that way Saturday. Obviously, he got sacked five times. They were pressuring him a lot. He helped the situation because I thought he was holding on to the ball a little bit too much, helping the collapse, to have the pocket collapse against him. I thought that Pete Carroll's game plan was relatively too conservative. He threw the ball 27 times. He ran the ball 25 times, even though Chris Carson was decent. The bottom line is he was no Sam Akers. Sam Akers was balling Saturday. I mean, he was a man amongst boys running a football for L.A. Considering what happened to Wolford and obviously Jared Goff coming in there with the broken thumb just 13 days removed from surgery and still being able to perform the way that he did. He wasn't stellar by any stretch of the imagination, but the bottom line is he did what he needed to do. But it was about L.A.'s defense, and it was about two things that really stood out in my mind. Take away the touchdown, 51-yard touchdown pass to D.K. Metcalf on a broken play. He had four receptions for just 45 yards. Tyler Lockett was virtually non-existent. What was it? Two receptions for like 43 yards? I mean, my Lord, he was only targeted four times. That speaks a lot about the Rams defense, the Rams secondary, their ability to get to the quarterback, not giving Russell Wilson but so much time, but primarily about Jalen Ramsey and what he's been able to do this season going up against Seattle. I just can't say enough about it. In the end, when I think about Seattle, and what the point that I want to get to is that they went to two Super Bowls and won a title because primarily it was about the Legion of Boom. The Super Bowl that they lost was when they decided to put the ball in the hands of Russell Wilson and throw a pass that got intercepted, obviously, instead of giving the ball to beast mode Marshawn Lynch at the half-yard line when this dude had been running roughshod and doing his thing in the second half of that particular Super Bowl. So I look at it from the standpoint that the mystique of the Seattle Seahawks has been lost along the way over the last few years. He's great, sure, but in the end,
It's about defense. Let the defense lead the way. And since they've prioritized Russell Wilson, that hasn't been the case. We know he's great, but the team hasn't been great because of it.
I totally disagree. First of all, quarterbacks have a window of greatness. What is it, 10, 15 years? And defense is generally 3 to 5. So where would you put your money? But secondly, I think what's overlooked is Seattle's offensive line is where they went wrong. Remember the Max Unger trade? They trade their excellent first-round pick center on the offensive line for Jimmy Graham. They thought they were helping, I guess, Russell Wilson that way. It didn't turn out that way. And then for years were arrogant about the O-line, thinking you don't really have to devote resources there. That only turned around recently. But that was really the issue. I understand emphasizing your franchise quarterback you're going to have to pay $100 million to when his rookie deal is up over a defense that's likely going to age out of their prime much more quickly. But the kind of arrogance Seattle had relying on Russell Wilson without really protecting him for years, I think is where they went wrong. I think in the playoff game we just saw, they were asking once again, Russell Wilson, be Superman. And when he turned out to just be Clark Kent on that night, they can't win.
Yeah, Max, you started to go down the right path. Listen, this is not Russell Wilson is the problem with the Seattle Seahawks. What happened in Seattle was they won when Russell was cheap, okay? That's what great organizations take advantage of. When you decide to pay a great player, which Russell Wilson is, and what Seattle should have done, you have to hit on your draft. Name the last time Seattle hit on their first-round pick. It's like 10 years ago. That's what has caught up to this organization. They haven't hit on their first picks. Look at the teams that are left in the NFC when it comes to the playoff race. Green Bay, you have to go back 2 years. They hit on Jair Alexander. Tampa Bay, they hit on Tristan Wirfs. The Los Angeles Rams traded away a pick for Jalen Ramsey. That's a hit. The New Orleans Saints have hit on back-to-back first-round picks. The Seattle Seahawks, once they paid Russell, stopped drafting well early in the first round. They've had some second-round picks that have been good. Obviously, Lockett, DK, Jerron Reed. But they haven't drafted well. That's been the big problem with this organization is Russell has kept them here because he's such a great player. They had to pay him. But their drafting has dropped them down to here. Their drafting hasn't allowed them to jump with the payment of the quarterback and then the kind of refurbishing of the roster. They haven't been able to pick up one of those defensive linemen that was dominant, you know, like a Michael Bennett or a Cliff Averill. They haven't picked a defensive back that became a Richard Sherman. They haven't picked a defensive back that became an Earl Thomas. That's what's been wrong with this organization and this football team. It just catches up to them. They're really good because of Russell. They're not great because of their poor early draft picks.
Stephen A., if you can hear me, I'm going to answer Dan's point, and you can infer what he said from my response and maybe respond, because I understand you couldn't hear what Dan had to say.
Sure.
Let me just say, Dan, as to your point that they keep missing early in the first round, but they hit on Russell Wilson in the third round originally. So like, they unless you think they just lucked up into that, they did a very good job, a phenomenal job of drafting a Hall of Fame quarterback,
right,
not early in the first round, not in the second round, but in the third round. In terms of where they went wrong, sure, they could have drafted better. But the fact is, we all know Russell Wilson is expected to be Superman. And it's not so much that he was god-awful, but Russell Wilson hasn't been Superman now for, what, the second half of the season?
Right.
Now including a playoff game. Also didn't win a playoff game last year. They're going to have to get him some help.
Well, for me, listen, I think they're going to have to get him some help. But, Dan, I mean, did I hear you start off your soliloquy calling us puppies? Is that what you said? Did you call us that?
Yeah,
That was upon little my pups. Initial.
Oh, I can't hear him now. Oh, he's lucky I can't hear him now. Let me say this to you, Dan. I'm not taking anything away from the greatness of Russell Wilson.
by any stretch of the imagination. But I do, and I understand what you're talking about, Max. If you got to invest in somebody, you invest in your quarterback, not necessarily your defense or just defensive person. I totally understand where y'all are coming from. I'm just saying that if you're Pete Carroll, what has been the ingredient to your success? Because when we look at Russell Wilson, he ain't the type of dude that's usually been famous for having some high-powered offense going out there and dropping 30 a game or whatever. He's the kind of person that always responds to the challenge, comes through in the clutch, and delivers you what you need most when you need it most. That's been his MO. You need a defense to set the tone. We're going to talk about Russell Wilson being great, but when we talk about Super Bowls, you got to have that defense, particularly when you're in Seattle playing for Pete Carroll. That seems to me to be the ingredient to their success, and that's what I think they've gotten away from.
You ain't lying, Dan.
But so what? The question is, did they make the mistake prioritizing? No! They paid one of the top six quarterbacks in the NFL. Again, when you do that, you have to draft really well. You can't miss. When you pay a quarterback, your opportunity to miss is small. Your margin for error is small, both in the draft and the free agency market. So when you decided to pay Russell Wilson, what are they going to let him walk? Were they just going to go, you know what, we prioritized our defense over a guy that we think is going to be a Hall of Fame quarterback? Max, you said it.
Well,
and so you got to pay him. But then when you do that, you can't draft that poorly early on.
Dan, for our audience out there, we have technical difficulties, so I can't hear Dan, and I didn't hear what Dan said, but I figured it out. Dan wanted to make sure that I was the person that didn't hear that argument, that weak argument that he tried to throw out there. But don't worry about it. You can run, but you can't hide. You sat up there, and you manipulated stuff technically, so I wouldn't hear you and get at you. But I will get at you another day, my brother.
You'll
be around.
Here's what he said.
I will get you.
You can't let Russell Wilson walk, Stephen A. You can't let him walk, bottom line.
I'm not letting him walk.
Really,
I'm not
talking,
I don't have a voice.
Stephen
A. doesn't have
Stephen
ears.
Stephen A.
About Russell
you're
Little.
Not a dog. You're a pup.
Molly.
Just remember that.
Molly,
okay?
Best thing that happened to him.
I'm
best
a
thing
pit
that happened to America
to
today.
Let's be clear.
Best thing
Let's
that happened to America today. Stephen A. can't hear and Max can't talk.
I said I can't hear you, Dan. Didn't I say I can't hear you?
Classic.